by the time I got downtown, it was 3:30, and then I had to do a little bit of work and had a cookie, and then was finally like, I should probably get real food. So I went and had a beer and food, but mostly a beer.
You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Hello, and welcome to Dots, Lines, and Destinations. I'm joined by Seth Miller this week. I'm Stephen Seagraves, and we're oceans apart. Not just a continent, just a full ocean.
A full ocean and a continent.
And a continent, yeah. It's 9 hours.
From here, we'd probably do like a more northerly route. And so, I mean,
yeah, I mean, the two seas.
Anyway. There's a Greenland in between us this time. I'm in Riga, Latvia this evening. Well, it's bright and early in the morning in on the west coast of the United States. So some exciting times for recording.
Yes, yes.
For example, Peter's nursing a coffee, and I've already had my first beer of the evening.
This is true. And I don't think it's appropriate for me to have a beer right now at 8:30 in the morning.
Is it a timing issue or a context issue?
It's probably
like a morning beer isn't always a bad thing.
No. Like getting into Europe and having a shower beer is definitely an awesome thing.
I found myself very frustrated a couple of days ago when Gatwick Airport had its scheduled 6 a.m. local time tweet go out saying, "Welcome to the airport. If you're lost, for adults, make sure to find your way to the bar and order a drink." And I was like, that seems a little tone deaf and off. But also, like, I have been the guy that at 6 a.m. was trying to find a drink in an airport, so I don't know.
Yep. Anyway. So, I mean, I think let's talk about your travels. We'll do that in the bonus section of the show. So Patreon subscribers, stay tuned. But let's talk about some Thai Airlines Star Gold.
So remember back when United had the deal where, like, if you prepaid, I think it was like $50,000 into a small business travel bank sort of thing, you'd get elite status out of that?
Yep.
Thai Airways is more or less doing the same thing. They're selling gold elite status if you're willing to bank $10,000 with them. And then you get credit to use it for, you know, future whatever.
Yeah. And you get 2 years of the
credit. 2 years of the status, yeah. And I assume that the credit is also valid for 2 years. I don't know. I mean, obviously, if you're someone who plans to travel again, and I guess Thailand is sort of starting to open up. I don't know. I can't keep track entirely with them. It sort of comes and goes. But last I heard, they were sort of back to opening up, so you could leave and come back, or even if you're a foreigner, actually show up a couple times over 2 years. I guess it's only a moderately bad deal. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems it's if you're in Thailand and you live there and you haven't flown Thai for a couple of years and now you're about to start traveling again, I get it. I think if you live,
I guess the question is how much do you need to fly to spend $10,000?
Well, that's true. Yeah, I mean in Thailand or in Southeast Asia, I would say a lot because a lot of stuff isn't open yet. But if you're going to Europe or
I should check. I don't even know what they're flying to. Like, I don't know what Thai Metal operates to Europe right now.
Yeah, that's true. Good point. I mean, it's
weird. Is the best I can come up with. But
yeah. And probably not the best promotion.
Maybe great 5,000. If you're the airline.
yeah. Star Gold costs us nothing, and 10,000.
So it's funny you say that costs us nothing. I had a conversation at one point with someone who's run loyalty programs in the past. And apparently there is sort of a, if not an outright cost, at least sort of negotiated limits of how many people they'll sort of comp into the program.
Oh, interesting.
And I don't know how strict those are, if there's financials or something, and how they sort of all negotiate, if it's a percentage of the total or what. But there are, and if it's may not even be all alliances, but there were some spectrum of sort of limits somewhere in there. That said, especially if, like, you know, the things that cost are like lounge access, right? Mm. Negotiated, if you use my lounge, if you use a partner lounge, you owe them money kind of thing. And they, you know, obviously there's a reciprocal back and forth and it all gets, you know, traded out so that in theory, the total dollar amount that changes hands is supposed to be relatively low, but there could be some real money, involved, but it was an interesting.
I think of it as like for them to do this promotion, right? It's like it costs them nothing. And if people do take them up on it, then it just goes to this, like you said, it goes to this limit of however many they can have. But then there's still, yeah. I mean, you're paying, you're basically paying for it, right? As a consumer, you're paying for that status. It's no different than like being a 1K with United. You know what I mean? Like,
Being a gold with United, but
yeah, yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like you're paying $15,000 to United to be 1K a year. That's basically
If you buy enough airfare.
Yeah, exactly. Because it is it's a, you know, monetized program. So it's I don't know. I think it's a little early to make the jump and do this.
I get it. Anything? I mean, for anyone. I'm also generally opposed to pre-investing in loyalty programs unless you have a very, very, very high certainty of what your travel is going to look like.
Yep. Yeah. Great point.
It's really hard for me to see. It's hard for me to see the value of buying into a loyalty program, which I know sounds a little weird. Like, loyalty programs are fine, they're great, but I feel like going out of your way to quote unquote invest in one versus sort of naturally taking advantage of whatever benefits may come your way does not align with my typical travel patterns. How's that the politic way of saying it?
yeah no, it makes sense. You're putting a lot of money down up front with no guarantee you're going to take those flights on that airline.
Yeah.
So, tell me about KLM and the Amsterdam meltdown.
Yeah, that was bad. That was really, really, really bad. So on Saturday of last week, there were planned, works. I don't know, runway work, I think, but construction.
Yep.
Plus, there was some weather that then forced most of the runways, like the remaining runways, it changed what was available, apparently. So everything at Schiphol was landing on runway 6, which is, I mean, fine, the planes can all land there, but they were down to just one runway for arrivals. They were using the 236s, so the Polderbahn and the one next to it, the center, for departures, which, again, sort of fine, whatever, but apparently the weather and the backup and whatever caused issues such that KLM was forced to cancel some flights. And when that happened, people were already at the airport, and it like snowballed to hell in a hurry, to the point that by the end of the evening, about 15 or so of the remaining flights, like for evening arrivals into Amsterdam, did not carry any passengers. They flew the planes back, but not passengers. Like, because passengers got stuck and people were connecting onward got stuck. And, like, there was concern that the building was too crowded, maybe, or it was getting dangerous. Things got out of hand. And between the airport and the airline, they agreed to not bring any more people to Amsterdam to try to sort that out. And the idea of, like, well, we'll bring the planes back, but we'll only bring them back empty. We can't afford to have, I guess it's, you know, if it's 150 people per plane, it's like 2,500 people.
Yeah.
So it is a lot, but like to complete, and like you need baggage handling and all that other stuff, but they just 100% said no and did not bring that. It's amazing to me.
So, I mean, what is the root cause of this? Like, is it just too many people? Because we've seen other airports facing similar stuff. I think Dublin
has had a whole bunch of problems. I can't wait to be there end of this week. Briefly considered not going because I didn't want to deal with security lines. And, you know, this is the thing. Like, the press is bad enough that I had a voluntary, and so partially voluntary, like, I'm going to a conference. I had committed to be there. People are expecting to see me and meet me there. But, like, I was considering not going because I didn't want to deal with it. I was like, oh, screw it. I'll find somewhere to hang out in Europe for a week instead on the continent, like somewhere else in Europe, and, like, not deal with flying. Take a train. Take many trains to get wherever I need to go. I don't know. But I'm already been frustrated by, especially long haul, but frustrated by flying of late. And so I'm just not sure, like, it's worth the stress and the chaos to go just to this trade show. And I'm going, but, we'll see in the morning. I plan to. But yeah, there are a bunch of airports. I mean, the UK has had problems at various times in various airports. You know, it's the Dublin one is amazing to me. First, it was lines are crazy, get here early. And it's like people who are getting there 3 hours early were still missing their flights. And then it turns out that it's someone else like, oh, well, that's happening because there's too many people here too early. So what we need you to do is only arrive between 2 and 3 hours prior to your flight. And if you arrive earlier than that, we're going to check your boarding pass before you go in the building. And if you're too early, we're going to make you wait over here in a tent outside. And we'll bring some porta potties out. So, you know, it'll be sanitary, I guess. But like, but then if you're like, it was please show up early. And then it was, well, not that early. And, you know, I was surprised by this. There's a lot of night before check-in and check bags offered in mm-hmm. Europe.
Mm-hmm.
That is something it's a relatively foreign concept to me. And I get it. I understand like the words and whatever, but it's not something I'd ever would have considered doing. And when I asked about that on Twitter, a bunch of people responded, mostly Europeans, saying, no, we do this all the time. It's typical. Like it's a 3 or 4 hour ride to the airport for us. So we go in the night before, get a hotel, but the train or the bus drops you off at the terminal. So as long as you're there the night before, you drop your bags off, take an overnight bag back to the hotel. So you got like clean underwear and a toothbrush. But then your flight out, your bag's already checked. It's easier in the morning. And so apparently, like, Dublin is pushing it again hard. And so, like, it's – but a lot of them are saying also, like, there's a combination of security checkpoints are slightly understaffed, which, again, like with many things, people laid off, getting people to take those jobs, which involve mostly getting yelled at for not very much money and having to commute to the airport every day is not great. And then get them trained and relicensed for that, which especially ground handling stuff can vary airport to airport, even within the same country. There's no real necessarily standards of like, I am trained and certified. I can be a ground handler like there is to be a pilot, for example.
Yep.
So there's a lot of interesting different discussions about that and what it takes to get people back staffed up. But then on top of that, it's like the usual idiocy of people having a water bottle in their bag and it takes a long time to run every bag check and chaos ensues.
Yeah.
I mean, Dublin accidentally scheduled a bunch of trainees and thought they were fully staffed one day, but there were people that like weren't certified to work. I think we talked about that.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's just like, so some of it's an own goal, if you will, like that. But some of it is there's actually not enough people.
Yeah. Is how long do you think this lasts? Like, because this isn't just in Europe, right? Like, this is happening in the U.S. too.
Yeah, and it's 6 months at least, but part of that will be offset by demand dropping again when the summer ends. I mean, this is the same sort of discussion about everybody's pissed about the fact that they're still testing to come back into the United States. You got airlines saying it's got to go away, it's got to go away, it's got to go away, and me looking at loads and where I can find seats and saying, it clearly is not affecting any sales for the next 3 months. What are they complaining about? And no one buys tickets more than 3 months in advance anymore. So what's going on?
Yeah.
And obviously, like, they're getting ahead of the game and trying to fight it for future ticket sales for the fall and winter. But it's definitely not affecting demand this summer.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, you know where I stand on the testing requirements in the United States. But I think I'm more like it feels like theater. I care less about the airline's ability to make money. So, I don't think it's limiting people. The people who really want to travel are traveling, and the people who are a little hesitant, like me, aren't traveling. So it's not affecting demand that much.
Yeah, and I mean, there's going to be congressional hearings in the next couple of days. The latest group that wants to talk about it are conference organizers in the United States who are saying until that rule goes away, no one's willing to commit to a new conference, and those do have a long lead time.
Yep.
And so I sort of get that, but I don't know. There's a lot of people that weren't committing to conferences in the United States anyways. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or there's conferences happening, but they may not have international visitors right now for that reason. But it's here nor there.
Not here at all. That's the point, isn't it?
True. What is the story about Ryanair and the Afrikaans language test? What is this?
Apparently, Ryanair has been claims to have been notified that there's a surge in fake South African passports, like fraudulent passports. And so people who are showing up with a South African passport to fly have been given a citizenship test.
Oh my God.
A piece of like a random Ryanair ground agent somewhere at a counter hands them a piece of paper saying, answer these questions. And it's like, what is Independence Day? And where's the capital? And some other relatively basic stuff that you'd like to hope anyone who's from there would know. And probably some stuff that anyone who has an interest in South African history would also know, or could figure out pretty quickly. Especially if you knew the test was coming.
Yeah, go ahead.
The test is given in Afrikaans, which is not by any stretch the official language, certainly not the only official language, and was the language used by the white oppressors when there was the apartheid, under the apartheid regime. So there's a whole lot of people like now arguing that this is extra racist.
You think?
Yeah, it's not just a little racist. This is the extra stuff.
Couldn't they just, you know, try the passport out, you know, like scan it and see if it actually scans properly? And
so my understanding is that when they scan the password in at the counter, like they swipe it to the keyboard, all that's doing is reading the text on it and typing into fields. I'm not so sure it's actually validated against anything.
Oh, so it's not like an immigration scan,
no,
basically.
And maybe it's supposed to be in some places, I don't know, but I think it might just be populating, you know, a file that gets uploaded to someone else eventually. But this goes back to that story I told a few weeks ago of a friend of a friend who went to Costa Rica or Belize, like lost their passport, got a new one, then found the old one and they hadn't punched the holes in it. And so when he got there, because they'd swiped him in, they swiped it in and he was using the old one. So they knew right when he got there that he was illegal, but they let him get all the way there.
Yeah. I mean, in that case, right? I mean, is this because basically it would be Ryanair's fault if they sent someone to South Africa with a fake passport?
Well, so Ryanair doesn't fly to South Africa.
Well, yeah, I know that. But like if they connect them or interline them down to South Africa?
Or let them immigrate. Right? Remember, like even within Schengen, like you're helping someone cross a border. So there's still the risk of Ryanair has facilitated transborder travel for someone illegally. And trying to verify the passport to make sure that doesn't happen. I'm sure that there is a risk there. Typically, if an airline delivers a passenger without the proper documentation, the airline is often considered on the hook for it. They're culpable.
Yeah.
So, yes, I mean, that's part of it, but
there's got to be a better way
to solve it. Yeah. I guess, you know, you know, but the documents looked fine to me. Turns out to, I guess, not be a valid answer. I don't know.
Oh, man. Brexit and Nice Air. Brexit's basically kept Nice Air out.
Yeah, Nice Air is the new Northern Icelandic airline flying out of I can never say it right. Akureyri?
The
second city on the north side, northeast side. And apparently Nice stands for Northern Iceland. That's where Nice Air is. But they started operations. They got their first plane. They're doing their thing, and they had flights filed for Stansted and Manchester, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
There's a second city in the UK, and their UK operating license has not been approved yet, and that means they can't fly there. Like, and so they had to pull those airports off the market. The whole deal, like refund the tickets, all that fun stuff. They're still listed as destinations, but they don't show up on the calendar. Like as far out as the calendar goes on their website. And it's made all the more amusing because on Monday, Stansted Airport tweeted, "Go visit Northern Iceland, see the aurora, blah 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 blah." And I actually replied to it saying, "Guys, they can't sell tickets. They pulled their sales," and then they deleted the tweet. So, doing my part to help keep Twitter, you know, amusing, I guess. Accurate.
Do we know what the delay was in getting the licensing, like the ability to fly there?
My understanding is, you know, sort of like in the U.S., if a foreign airline wants to fly, they have to apply and do the paperwork and all those other things. And I don't know, maybe the UK is too busy trying to throw a vote of no confidence at Boris Johnson today to sort it out. There's a couple airlines that apparently have been having troubles getting those sorted, so. It turns out that, you know, having your own unique regulatory environment means you have to have regulators to actually do the job instead of depending on, you know, a group to share that burden.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then AA has increased their code sharing with Qatar Airlines. What's is this good? This is good. I mean, I think.
I'm sure it's not bad. I don't know. I'd go so far as to say good, but they. I don't think code shares matter nearly as much as airlines seem to think they do.
Yeah.
Short version, but American launched their nonstop service to Doha over the weekend, and so as part of that added code shares beyond Doha to like 18 countries, mostly in Africa. And it is good. Fine. You can get an AA flight number onward. Again, I'm not sure in the grand scheme of things why that should matter. Yeah. Right, like it sort of affects how things show up in a sales interface, but it shouldn't necessarily affect pricing. It shouldn't affect a lot of other things. So there's ways around those other things that are just as easy to implement. So yay. I mean, and as part of it, Qatar Airways also got a bunch more destinations in the US that it has on American Metal where it's putting its code. So again, same thing, but like you could always just connect.
So this is like a technicality, right? Because American can still sell you a flight on a Qatar flight number rather than an American flight number if they wanted, right?
That's how I've always understood these things to work. And it's not even like, oh, well, now they can sell it as their own city pair and fairing, right? Like the fare agreement typically is separate from what code is on it.
Yeah.
So I don't really understand in general why code shares matter so much to so many people, other than quite frankly to confuse the market, because like, okay, great, I'm flying on American to, oh wait, no, it's not.
Well, I was actually going to bring that up, is I actually think it's more confusing than just telling someone they're going to be flying on this other airline. Yeah. Like how does it actually make your operations or your sales process better for the consumer? I don't necessarily think it does. And in most cases, because now you've got just like a special little section that says operated by another airline underneath when you sell it. Right.
Right. So very, very small fine text that most people don't read and most people don't understand when it gets to it.
Exactly. Yeah. Boy, oh boy. I don't know. Let's talk about AA's nonstop. So JFK to Doha. Why? Is this simply to connect people onward on Qatar, or... I know Qatar's using their terminal now at JFK.
Yeah, and I mean, why onward? What the hell do I know? The American, when they announced this route, it's a wingtip flight, right, which runs basically at the same time as the evening flight on Qatar Airways. It's additional capacity that someone seemed to think was needed. The traffic just going to Doha is pretty low, and I find it hard to believe that Qatar Airways really, really wanted American to bring some extra capacity in to get people to Doha to connect onwards. Maybe that Qatar flight has the 350 that they run today is oversold all the time and they needed the extra lift, but you know, it's not an A350 anymore. Don't have any A350s to spare because none of them can hold their paint anymore. So they needed help, but like, someone raised the analogy. It's like, why did Americans start Los Angeles to Hong Kong service when Cathay was running it four times a day or something like that back in the day? Like, what value did that bring to the market? And you know, there's arguments to be made for corporate contracts that only work on home metal or things like that. But I'm sure there's a very good reason for it. I'm sure someone at American did a market analysis and said we can make money doing this.
I don't know though. I disagree.
I'm sure someone did that. It's not right. They don't actually use a dartboard as much as we like to joke about that. Someone had to come up with this should make money. Here's why, and presented it to someone else who agreed with them and approved it.
I don't know. I'm not sure, Seth. I mean, this doesn't. If you look at the
naive to assume that like airlines actually have plans.
Well, I feel like someone's like, you know, we should fly this route. This would be cool. And then they're like, okay, now go find the numbers that justify it. I think that's how it worked. And then they found some numbers and they like made it justify it.
And like, don't get me wrong, right? Like for the longest time, Cleveland was United's most profitable hub. And then the next day they're like, it's losing money every single month for shutting it down.
Yeah.
So there's always games to be played with numbers, but someone clearly has numbers somewhere that makes them think this works. I would like to see them at some point, but you know, premium demand has not been great for the first couple days.
I think for flyers, it's great, right? If you're looking for reward space, you know, here's an empty flight. It's not as great of a product, but we can get you there.
Yeah, and it's not completely empty, but yes. It's currently running on a 777-300ER. It's going to shift down to the 200ER later this year as some fleet adjustments happen. So there won't be a first class cabin anymore.
Yeah.
But I think I read on the inaugural six of the eight first class seats were employees.
Yeah, I mean,
It's not good for yields.
I wonder if they could have done something cool, right? Like, could they have done something different and said, well, let's do Charlotte to Doha. That's new on a 7-8. Like, I mean, I know they're having issues getting 7-8s, but something like that where it's like, well, let's think of another place that Qatar is not flying.
And that makes sense, certainly, especially if you have a joint venture, which they don't.
Mm.
Right? They do not. But like that's where you get like Pittsburgh to London.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because BA's got a spare few days a week on a 788 and they can run it back and forth. That American would never try to do that.
Yeah.
Or Charleston or New Orleans. Right? There's some sort of less well connected. And those are routes that generally have enough demand either to, in that case, London or onward beyond into Europe on BA, where it works. Where I'm really confused by this one is, okay, fine, like from the United States traffic to Doha that's actually stopping in Qatar,
mm-hmm.
I would assume that New York is the center of that, lacking any evidence, you know, that other cities have reasonable demand going or people just going to Doha. But how much really is there? And if it's not demand just from New York, how many people really want to connect in JFK versus like, oh, you're coming from Chicago or from another big city or even from slightly smaller cities and connecting at an existing Qatar Airways gateway.
Yeah.
Where you don't have to deal with JFK or even worse, a LaGuardia to JFK transfer because not that many cities connect to JFK anymore for American.
Yeah.
And I mean, whatever, maybe JetBlue feeds some of it at the end with the alliance and blah, blah, blah. But it's a super interesting route, obviously. I am not convinced it is long for this world, but I'm more convinced at least at some point someone thought it would be than you are. But obviously we'll have to see how long it actually lasts.
I mean, it strikes me. I mean, it's kind of like the Seattle to Bangalore flight a little bit. Well, not really. I mean, because there's no connecting traffic on that end of it. Mm-hmm. And that one actually made a little bit more sense to me because on the Seattle end, you can connect to, you know, there's American flights and there's Alaska. You have this alliance. Alaska's can connect people up and down the West Coast. That makes sense. Got it. But this just seems like, one, how many people are like, where are using Qatar as your connection to the Maldives? I mean, there are not that many people going to the Seychelles and the Maldives. Like, that's just, maybe there are, but I just don't feel like it's the best connection point unless you're going to India or one of these destinations that's very, you know, expensive. And I would agree. Yeah. Probably JFK is probably the most popular area for people going to and from Doha itself or that part of the world. But I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, I digress. I think they could have done like even like DFW. They probably could have done okay on
everything connects in Dallas.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, anyway.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that is a lot longer of a flight. And Qatar started flying. I mean, also flight that one. So
yeah. And they fly Houston, and I mean, you know, do Lubbock. I don't know, Baton Rouge. Just make it interesting. So.
Doha. I'm not sure how interesting it can get.
Anything else you want to talk about before we talk about your travels?
Funky new business class seat.
Oh, okay.
It's called the Vantage Duo. This just came out this Monday morning. That's worth maybe mentioning. This is a 2x2 single aisle business class product.
Mm-hmm.
So no direct aisle access, but it's not a flatbed. It's designed for probably more premium than what a U.S. carrier would deliver, but China. Southeast Asia,
mm-hmm.
You get a lot of sort of mid to long haul, say 5 to 7 hour, 4 to 7 hour routes where you don't need a bed,
yep.
But you want something that's pretty premium. And it, when it's upright, it looks a lot like the what's called the Continental seat was.
Thompson?
So it's Thompson. It is a Thompson product. So it looks a lot like that Vantage product.
Yep.
But instead of extending into a full bed, it basically becomes a, like the zero gravity position recliner that sort of like rolls back on itself in a fixed shell design.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. The seats are angled out slightly like towards the outside of the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And that offset obviously creates a little bit of extra privacy from your neighbor. It makes it so the window seat gets a slightly wider like shelf because there's a gap between the seat and the wall. So it's like actually one of the few seats where the window gets an advantage rather than the aisle. I don't know. It looks interesting. They're claiming a 130-degree recline at a 41-inch pitch, which I'm not sure how many people are going to pitch a premium cabin at 41 inches versus... Or that's why I think Asia as opposed to the U.S., because in the U.S. premium is like 36 to 38 at most.
Yeah, this reminds me... It's similar to the product kind of... I mean, it sounds better, but it's similar to the product we took, you and I and a friend, from Beijing to Hong Kong on Cathay Dragon.
Yeah. That was like Barca Lounger with a big leg rest and everything.
Yeah, yeah, and I think this is better than that. But still, it's the seat. It's the kind of seat that makes sense on that route. Like there's a business amount of business traffic going that you want a premium product on, and it's a it was what, a 3-hour flight? I don't even remember.
Yeah.
So it kind of suited it. It wasn't. I didn't need to sleep. I stayed awake. I watched a movie. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Space for a movie and a meal.
Yeah.
No, it's a really interesting product. My main concern is anything with an angle, sort of slightly outbound twist like that, or honestly anything these days, you end up with the sort of footwell challenge.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I'm interested to see how they address that.
Yep.
The renderings don't show it very well. Not surprising, which neither surprising but also worrisome.
Yeah.
Like, is it not showing it? Like, why?
Is it going to be? Are they going to be showing the seat in any of the air shows? You think?
So it's supposed to be at Aircraft Interiors next week. So hopefully I can see it there.
Sweet. There you go. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, let's end it there, Seth, unless you got anything else. And we'll talk about your travels in the bonus episode. To our listeners, thanks for tuning in. If you're a Patreon subscriber, thanks for your support. And stay tuned for a little bit more. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Take care.